one of the maxims that he talked about, he said, internal despotism and external colonialism are two sides of the same coin. Let's call that coin the coin of violent oppression. And he said internal despotism and external colonialism need each other in a sense. Now, let's open up what that means.
Moji Agha is on a Mossadegh awareness tour with a stop this Sunday in Independence. We'll hear from him about that this morning.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Stay tuned now for Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer.
Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us, on Twitter, at Tell Somebody Now. This is your host, Tom Clammer. If you have any comments or questions on the show, drop me a line at mail@tellsomebody.us. That's mail@tellsomebody.us. We'll get to Moji Agha and his Mossadegh Awareness Tour in just a minute. But first, the podcast of last week's edition of Tell Somebody with Professor Robert McChesney talking about dollarocracy, how the money and media election complex is destroying America, the new book he co-authored with John Nichols, has been posted. Go to www.tellsomebody.us and click on the tile for links to listen to the show or download an MP3 to your computer. You can also subscribe to the Tell Somebody podcast for free at the iTunes store. Check out all the past shows at tellsomebody.us. And if you missed the one a couple weeks ago with Dr. Stephanie Kelton, chair of the economics department at UMKC, you need to listen to that one. Click on the tile with her name on it at tellsomebody.us. Folks from Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance have been doing presentations about the impact of tar sands development, transportation, and refining. They tell stories about their experiences resisting the Keystone XL, discuss future tar sands projects in the area, and move forward collectively in their efforts to resist all forms of tar sands infrastructure. There will be a presentation tonight at 7 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church, 6641 Mission Road, Prairie Village, Kansas. More information at Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance. .org. On with the show. I was contacted recently by Sufi monk Moji Agha, who is on what he calls a Mossadegh Awareness Begets American Nonviolence Tour. Moji Agha is an Iranian-American bilingual poet and writer of essays, and a peace, human rights, and earth activist who is trained as a cultural psychologist. He is founder of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, www.mossadeghlegacyinstitute.org, and have a pencil ready because we will spell that for you later in the show. I sat down with Moji Agha last week to find out more about all of this. Give a listen. Moji Agha, welcome to Tell Somebody.
Thank you for having me.
And very glad to have you. And what brings you to Kansas City?
Well, I'm in this area for there's a tour, a national tour I am on, which I started in May of 2013. The name of the tour is called Mossadegh Awareness Begets American Nonviolence. It has a longer name also, Mossadegh Awareness Begets Sanity in Foreign Policy. And I'm in this area. It just happens that next Sunday, the 18th of August, is the 60th anniversary of the coup in 1953, on which day Dr. Mossadegh's pluralistic and democratic government was overthrown by a CIA-engineered coup with help from the British MI6. And in that action, Iran's democracy was killed with horrendous consequences that continue on up to this date. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm here.
And we will get information on the location and date up at tellsomebody.us, and we will repeat it before the end of the show, too.
Thank you.
We are looking forward to that. But why for tour in America promoting peace and some of these broader issues, why Mossadegh as opposed to somebody else?
Well, because Mossadegh is a historic figure who was trying to chart a different history for not only Iran but also for the region. And then the colonial powers, which unfortunately the U.S. has become one, they did not like that. They wanted to have total control over the fate of the societies that they dominated through huge corporations. And Mossadegh was saying, no, let us have a peaceful coexistence among nations. He really believed in the United Nations Charter, and he also believed in the American Constitution in a sense. He actually came in 1951 to the U.S.
I believe I saw a picture of him standing with Harry Truman someplace.
Yes.
And Truman was actually approached to do the same kind of coup that later happened after Eisenhower, and he turned it down, right?
Yes. Truman was essentially said that, no, the CIA should not, its function is to gather intelligence for the national security, real national security of the United States, and it should not be used as an instrument of essentially colonial intervention. So Dr. Mossadegh came and actually met with President Truman, but President Truman was under British pressure. And but then when Eisenhower was elected in 1953, then or late 1952, and then assumed power in 1953, there were Dulles brothers, one the Secretary of State, the other one the head of the CIA, and they were essentially the instruments of the British policy, the company that now we know as British Petroleum. Dr. Mossadegh had the audacity to nationalize Iran's oil and to say, no, British Petroleum, you can actually be a contractor and you need to pay Iranian people for their resource. No, the British government and the British corporation, British Petroleum, they said, no, we want to have total control over your resources and essentially give you, you know, give you chewing gums in exchange for your most, you know, important national resource. And Dr. Mossadegh, he actually was in the U.S. almost pleading with the Truman administration to not allow this kind of thing happen. And so as a result of overthrowing Dr. Mossadegh, the U.S., it was very easy. Exactly 60 years ago, they spent, according to various accounts, about $1 million. And they were successful in killing a democracy. Mm-hmm. And then they said, wow, this is pretty easy. This was a covert operation, Operation Ajax, it was called. It was a covert operation. And then they tried it in 1954, and they overthrew the Mossadegh of Guatemala. And then there were a number of other countries, Indonesia, you know, Kenya, and you name it. Then, of course, in 1973, on September 11, they overthrew Allende in Chile. And so a pattern was set with that coup for the U.S. foreign policy that made the U.S. into an empire. Up to that time, at least people in Asia and Africa had not experienced the U.S. as a colonial power. Actually, in contrast, they had experienced the U.S. as a power, as a young country that had had a revolution against colonial power, the British. So actually, Dr. Mossadegh, in that very famous picture, which I have on the home page of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, which I started last fall, there is a picture of him right in front of the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, and in a very telling gesture, he is touching the crack of the Liberty Bell. That's why I've chosen that picture to be the logo of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, of which this tour, Mossadegh Awareness Begets American Nonviolence, that picture is the logo of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute. And to answer your question as to why the American people, why am I doing this, why is the significance of Mossadegh to the American people, I think that coup was the beginning of shredding of the U.S. Constitution. And the American people, the silent victim of that coup is the American national interest, if you will. The American Constitution. In the American Constitution, we, the people, are created equal. So when you overthrow a democracy of a small, relatively small, weak country, then you violate the most primordial essence of the U.S. Constitution, which I admire as an American citizen. But the Constitution began to be abrogated in a very profound sense with that coup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever's wonderful about the Constitution, it's always had its flaws, like the crack in the Liberty Bell. I've never really thought about it in that sense before, but the 3/5 population count for slaves and so forth. Anyway, I digress.
Anyhow, I think the reason I actually admire the U.S. Constitution, it is because, with all the flaws that it had, it was quite a revolutionary, progressive document. Mm-hmm. When you say we, the people, i.e. it's our votes that is supposed to determine our future or our course of history, and you say we are created equal, that's pretty, you know, profound for human civilization. because human civilization, including the Persian Empire, which was Iran, has a long history, 8,000 years of history, 3,000 years of it in internal despotism. It is pretty revolutionary for a young, energetic country to proclaim the right of the people in a real sense, and to actually resist colonial domination, which the U.S. did. But unfortunately, with this coup in particular, the U.S. became a colonial power in Asia and Africa after the Second World War.
And tell me a little more about what you want to accomplish with this tour.
Well, the name of it is Mossadegh Awareness Begets American Nonviolence. What I want to accomplish is, first of all, my fellow American people, they need to learn about who Mossadegh was. Mossadegh was called George Washington of Iran. He has been called recently the Gandhi of Iran. He was building the foundations without it being called nonviolence at that time. He was building the foundations of what is necessary to be able to have a nonviolent way of relating humans, trying to treat one another as equals, and to try to organize their relationship nonviolently, without the need for war, without the need for aggression. And so if Mossadegh is, and Mossadegh was overthrown in the name of we the people, except that the people did not know about this. The honorary chair of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, I am so proud to have Professor Noam Chomsky to be the honorary chair of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, and he said he agreed with Cindy Sheehan, who is also a member of Mossadegh Legacy Institute's board of endorsers. Chomsky said he agreed with Cindy Sheehan in that this is an American moral responsibility, not an Iranian grievance. I wrote to Professor Chomsky, I said, I don't want to do this as an Iranian grievance. Mm-hmm. He said, you're absolutely right, this is an American moral responsibility, i.e. the people who caused this horrible tragedy, which is unfolding, its consequences is unfolding to this day, we the people need to become aware of what happened.
And I think that's happening to some extent. I mean, listeners of this station certainly hear about it on Democracy Now! And Alternative Radio with David Barsamian and other shows. So it's not secret, but it's maybe not as widely known as it should be. Well, now, back in the 50s, how much did Iranians and Americans know about the CIA involvement in toppling Mossadegh?
Well, the Iranians knew about it because they received the blunt side of the instrument. So they knew that there was the Americans. The American people, for 25 years, Operation Ajax was secret in this country. So the American people did not know. So the most important aspect of the contract, i.e. informed consent, what had been abrogated. People did not know that in their name democracies were being killed, and instead monsters, quote-unquote, dictators, puppets were being installed, which certainly took care of interests of the corporations of which they were an instrument, but the American people they were essentially victimized in a very profound sense. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned David Barsamian. He's a speaker in the next gathering of this tour, one of the next gatherings of the tour on the 30th of August in Boulder. And David has been working with Professor Chomsky and with others trying to make sure that history is known to the people in whose name history unfolds. And so that's part of why I am driving around. I'm a Sufi monk. I've given up my whatever, you know, I'm a trained in cultural psychology. And I have founded a number of organizations. So in this case, I decided last fall when I was working on putting a project together called Truth and Reconciliation Process Iran. And in the process of putting together that project, I was looking at the websites of the projects, the, if you will, the legacy institutes for Gandhi, for Martin Luther King, for Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and Nelson Mandela of South Africa, and leaders of nonviolence. And I was saying to myself, oh my God, where is Mossadegh? So I decided we need to have a Mossadegh Legacy Institute so that we, the people, can become aware of that it is possible. Of course, we have to do a lot of work in order to bring about a nonviolent America and a nonviolent world, but we, the people, need to become aware of what has been happening. So anyhow, that's how this project came about, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you about some of the maxims that Dr. Mossadegh talked about.
Please do.
Okay, well, one of the maxims that he talked about, he said, internal despotism and external colonialism are two sides of the same coin. Let's call that coin the coin of violent oppression. And he said internal despotism and external colonialism need each other in a sense. Now, let's open up what that means. Internal despot at the time was the Shah. He was, you know, the Shah was placed back in power through this coup. External power, external colonialism was the U.S. and the British. And they obviously needed each other because the internal despot, the Shah, needed the external colonialists in a quote-unquote positive codependence. Like today in Saudi Arabia. The king of Saudi Arabia, the dictator of Saudi Arabia, the despot, internal despot of Saudi Arabia, obviously needs the colonial power, the U.S., the military-industrial complex, to keep that relationship going. There is another way of that relationship, codependence, existing, which is perhaps more nefarious, and that is when the internal despot and the external colonialist need one another as enemy. If you listen very closely to the speeches of the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Iran's so-called supreme leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, they use equally to one another the word enemy, and they point at each other. The U.S. needs Iran, or especially the Islamic government in Iran, which was supposed to be an Islamic republic. The U.S. and Israel need the Iranian regime to behave like a monster, dictatorial, you know, abusive of human rights, monster so that they can justify colonial intervention, remaining in the Persian Gulf, stealing the oil, maintaining that control, and possibly try to create another war in the region in order to finish the project of redrawing the map of the Middle East, the project for the new American century. So, and on the other side, the Benjamin Netanyahu and the military-industrial complex, they are needed as Satan, as the bogeyman. For who? For the internal despot, for the so-called supreme leader of Iran, because as long as they behave in a colonial monstrous way, then the supreme leader and his acolytes, they justify internal despotism. They say, oh, we have a state of emergency. They actually love the current brutal sanctions that have been imposed on the Iranian people. They like it, they need it, because as long as these sanctions are there, they can say, see, the U.S. does not want to have a relationship, an equal, respectful relationship between two nations with our country. The U.S. and Israel want to impose these sanctions, therefore we are justified in maintaining this state of emergency, in this state of Cold War. So the supreme leader of Iran is behaving exactly like the late leader of the Soviet Union, Leonid Brezhnev. Leonid Brezhnev, the way he overthrew Khrushchev, his reformist, the reforms that Khrushchev was trying to institute, he was exactly doing what the military-industrial complex needed. So internal despotism and external colonialism are symbolic representation of the, on the one hand, the right to vote as the foundation of every other right, and on the other hand, the brutality, the violence of money and power collaborating with one another. So when Mossadegh talks about internal despotism and external colonialism need one another, that's what he is talking about. And ironically, the president of the United States who overthrew Dr. Mossadegh in 1953, in his famous speech, President Eisenhower, he, after 8 years being a president as a Republican general, he said in that famous speech, beware of the excesses of the military-industrial complex, because it's going to take away your liberties.
Yeah. Now, and a number of us have heard that the original idea for that speech, he had a third component, the congressional military-industrial complex.
Okay. Well,
but still,
it's the same. It's the same entity. Whether it's called the 1%. Whether it's called the Big Brother, whether it's called the military-industrial congressional, complex, it's brutality of power, of money and power, dictating their will, the will of the minority, onto the people. So Eisenhower said the same thing as Mossadegh had said 8 years earlier. And that's a lesson of history.
But I also read recently that Eisenhower, I think in his memoirs, what I read was characterized as he angrily dismissed Mossadegh as naive and foolish or something like that.
Well, the character assassination that Dr. Mossadegh received in order to justify this horrible crime is one of the most famous and most extensive in history, which is why Dr. Mossadegh and Gandhi did not receive a Nobel Peace Prize.
And you have an idea to remedy that situation, yes,
a project of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute that your listeners can actually hopefully go to that website. A project is, one of our projects is a petition in order to ask the Nobel Foundation to award a special, exceptional, money-free, joint Nobel Peace Prize to Mossadegh and Gandhi. And that's one of the projects of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute. The other project is America for Nonviolence.
This is Tom Clammer, and we've been talking to Moji Agha. We'll be back with some more after you listen to this. Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is Tom Clammer, and we've been talking to Moji Agha, who will be speaking in Independence, Missouri this Sunday, August 18th, 2:30 to 5 p.m. at the Walnut Gardens Community of Christ Church, 19201 East R.D. Mize Road in Independence. And this will be a special gathering on the 60th anniversary of the 1953 CIA coup in Iran. Let's get back to our conversation.
And talk more about America for Nonviolence.
Sure. As an activist in the past three decades, I've been watching with grief the extremely well-meaning peace, justice, and environmental activists in this country putting their heart out, putting their energy and dedication for a better world out on their sleeves, so to speak. And they have done some work, some successes, except that I keep seeing the same group of people, you know, going to the same demonstrations, the same picket lines, the same right to your Congress people, a group of well-meaning peace, justice, and environmental activists on the margins. And therefore, because they have been successfully marginalized, they are ineffective. So I said, a legacy of Mossadegh, who was a victim of American violence, how about if we have circles of nonviolence in America? And the purpose, the mission of circles of nonviolence would be to begin the process of integrating the results of the activities of peace, justice, and environmental movements so that they would have cumulative effect. So that we can, through that cumulative effect, so that we can actually change policy, as opposed to just utter our dissatisfaction on the street or otherwise, to actually change policy, be it environmental policy, social policy, economic policy, and certainly foreign policy. As long as we in this country have so many organizations and groups that are existing and they are acting, And I admire the action of every single one of them. Every single one of them are needed. The diversity is needed. As long as their effects is not integrated, we're going to be treated as people on the margins of society. And therefore, the military-industrial complex or the Big Brother or the 1% actually uses us in order to say, see, we have a multi-party democracy. People are so free. They can do whatever they want. They can demonstrate. So we are being used as the sheen of legitimacy. So I want the circles of nonviolence, circles of America for nonviolence, to begin the process of integrating the civil society in this country from the ground up. And I invite your listeners to actually go to the website of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute and to specifically go to that page called America for Nonviolence. We have, so far in the past month since I have announced this project, we have 4 circles of nonviolence already created. And I hope that we can announce the formation of another one in the Kansas City area.
Okay, and tell us that website. We will get it online at tellsomebody.us.
Sure. But you can put the URL on their website, but the best way to get to that website is if people Google 3 words, Mossadegh Legacy Institute, and Mossadegh is spelled M as in Mary, O as in Orange, S as in Sam, another S as in Sam, A as in Apple, D as in David, E as in Edward, G as in George, H as in Harry, so it's Mossadegh with 2 S's and a GH at the end, Mossadegh Legacy Institute. If people Google that phrase or search that phrase, whatever their search engine may be, then they will very easily find the website of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute.
Where have you been on this tour so far, and what kind of reaction have you gotten? That's part of the reaction, I assume, is these circles
of nonviolence
that you got started.
Yes. I've recently, the whole organization was founded last November, and then I said, you know, I need to get on the road, literally. And so I began in May, and so I began in Corvallis, Oregon, and we had a number of gatherings in Oregon and Washington, and in Idaho, one in Idaho, one in Salt Lake City, and we're going to have one here, and then I'm headed toward Colorado and New Mexico, and I'll be taking a rest in mid-September in Tucson, Arizona. That's where I live. And then I will resume, perhaps going back toward Texas. And so essentially to try to let people know, beware of the decisions that are made on your behalf. Please beware, because these decisions have long-term horrendous consequences.
Well, the 1953 coup, we're still living with the consequences of that, that exploded in 1979 with hostage taking.
Exactly.
And all of that. Right?
Exactly. Okay, let's put it this way. If there had not been a coup in 1953, if Dr. Mossadegh's government was allowed to stand, then people in the region would have a model of coexistence with a benign U.S. And there wouldn't have been an Iranian or Islamic revolution. It wouldn't have taken the Islamic turn, quote-unquote. Islamic fundamentalism would not have had a reason to be born. Islamic radicalism, quote-unquote. And then terrorism would not have been. So in a very real sense, perhaps 9/11 would not have happened.
Talk about that some more.
Well, that, you know, just in this trajectory that I just mentioned, 9/11 supposedly happened as a result of the dissatisfaction of some people who called themselves Muslims. Why were they dissatisfied? Well, they said Bin Laden and his acolytes, assuming that they did it, they said, we are mad at the relationship of the Saudi government with the U.S. government. Well,
among other things, among leaving troops in
yes,
Saudi Arabia.
Yes, after. Yes. That's the and they used Islamic teachings to justify to give shape to their dissatisfaction. And supposedly they did the horrible, dastardly acts of 9/11. So if Mossadegh had not been overthrown, then who knows, maybe the Saudi government would have become democratic. How about if the Saudi women have the right to vote? They cannot even drive, and the U.S., who claims to be a proponent of women's rights, doesn't have even a little problem, except that the U.S. says that it cares about the Afghan women, the Iranian women, their rights. Of course, the rights of the Iranian women and the human rights of people in all kinds of places are being violated with all kinds of justifications. However, when the U.S. has a colonial, racist, American exceptionalist double standard, where friends of the quote-unquote friends of the U.S. can do everything they would like, and the military-industrial complex looks the other way, yet it applies a double standard and punishes the countries that begin to disobey, as they did with Dr. Mossadegh, and then, the current justification for the horrible, brutal sanctions against the Iranian people, which are actually helping the regime and hurting the people. When people see that, they say, we don't buy this idea that the U.S. is interested in democracy and human rights and women's rights and all these noble ideas, because they see the actual, reaction, the actual behavior that is being implemented in the name of we the people. So I call the abuse of the women's rights, the abuse of women's rights by colonialism, I call it colonial feminism. Colonial feminism is when the rights of women as a cause is being used by a colonial entity, in this case the U.S. And the same thing applies with human rights, colonialized human rights, where the horrendous abuses of human rights in Saudi Arabia, for example, or in Palestine. Look at what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. There is apparently no problem with it. But then, when the same happens with the Iranian regime, then the U.S. says, "Oh, look how bad they are." And I'm saying that this kind of double standard, another arena of this double standard, is in the nuclear quote-unquote issue, the nuclear weapons issue. Israel has 400 or whatever number of nuclear weapons. It hasn't even signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. It has abrogated every single resolution of the United Nations Security Council. Yet, the U.S., the colonial power, doesn't have a problem. However, it says to the Iranian people, you don't even have the right to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes.
Right, and they have signed these
treaties. Right, they have signed the treaty and they're observing it. By the way, I am very critical of the Iranian regime, as I have expressed earlier. However, when the rights of people, when the sovereign rights, in this case, the sovereign right of the Iranian people to use nuclear energy or not to use nuclear energy, that's a decision that people of Iran should make democratically. It shouldn't be dictated by a colonial, brutal power to say, we're telling you, you don't have the right to do this. The fact that we have even used nuclear weapons, we are talking on the day after Nagasaki, the horrible crimes that happened by dropping nuclear bombs on people. And my hometown of Natanz, Iran, is under explicit threat by the Israelis and the Americans that they would be... Natanz is where Iran's nuclear enrichment facility is located. So my own hometown is under constant threat against international law. by U.S. and Israel, yet the same U.S. and Israel and colonial powers, they say, we are for human rights, we are for international law, we are the international community. The non-aligned movement, whose spiritual founder is Dr. Mossadegh, is for the right of the Iranian people to determine their own choice of whether to use nuclear energy or not.
And our regular listeners, to tell somebody, I would remind them, just a couple of weeks ago we had Ray McGovern on, once again reminding us of, I believe it was a 2008 National Intelligence Estimate.
Yes.
With unanimous assent by 16 different intelligence agencies, mm-hmm. that Iran stopped trying to develop a nuclear weapon in 2003, I believe it was, and hasn't started since.
Yes.
And that assessment has not been overturned by intelligence since, but we still have a lot of loose talk from right-wing politicians mostly, but, you know, somewhat across the spectrum, that Iran is this evil power that's going to make nuclear weapons and destroy Israel, and so
yes.
we have to hit them first.
Internal despotism and external colonialism are two sides of the same coin. Beware of the excesses of the military-industrial complex, because it's going to take away your liberties. These are two sentences, two maxims enunciated by one person, the victim of the colonial intervention by the U.S., the other one by the president who actually overthrew him. And they are saying the same thing because they understand the relationship.
Yeah.
So Iran, the whole thing about Iran's nuclear quote-unquote weapons program is a political issue. It doesn't have whatever merits its legal and technical dimensions may have. That's something that is very easily resolvable, except that a state of Cold War is needed by both sides, and the quote-unquote nuclear weapons issue of Iran is the excuse, is the pretext. So it's a political issue that is being used. That's why, even against the conclusions of the Israeli intelligence, among the intelligence agencies that you mentioned, various Israeli intelligence agencies, they have also said Iran does not have a nuclear weapons, active nuclear weapons program. So here we have a colonial issue that is used by the internal despots in Iran because they need the sanctions, they need the state of Cold War, and on the other side, the U.S. and Israel, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with Israel as a state existing. I would like it, as Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb, which I am a proud supporter of. I would like the Israel to behave like a civilized country in that region, and to not be a racist power. If Israel behaved like a decent country, I don't have a problem, and the vast majority of the people in the quote-unquote Islamic world don't have with its existence, even in that region, planted by colonialism. So if Israel behaved not with a double standard, which is against the teachings of Judaism, then people wouldn't have a problem with it. However, Israel or the policies that are being practiced in the name of the Israeli people is a colonial issue, which is like the wildest dream of Hitler coming true. Hitler wanted the Israeli government to be a monster. So the Israeli government needs to not be a monster. And also the Iranian regime should not be a monster.
Well, I mean, there was no Israeli government when Hitler was still alive, though.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is that the anti-Semites' wet dream is when the David has become a Goliath.
Yeah.
And if that stops, then people in the region, they want to live a normal life. They want to raise their families. They want to have freedoms. It is an affront for somebody called George W. Bush to say they hate us for our freedoms. That's what he said.
Indeed.
So anyhow, these are some of the thoughts that I think are relevant for your listeners to listen to and to pay attention to Musaddiq awareness. I use this term Musaddiq awareness as a way of pointing to something that is like a shadow of this country. The overthrow of Dr. Musaddiq is like a shadow that this country needs to confront. And if it is done, then we the people would be worthy of the proud American Constitution that says we the people are created equal. So thank you for having me on this show.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate it, and we'll try to keep an eye on your tour as it progresses. And again, we'll get links up at tellsomebody.us. Moji Aga, thank you very much.
Thank you, and may we the people get integrated so that we can have effect as we struggle against militarism, against gross injustice, and against the destruction of life on this vulnerable planet.
Moji Aga, founder, www.mossadeqlegacyinstitute.org. He'll be speaking in Independence, Missouri this Sunday, August 18th, at the Walnut Gardens Community of Christ Church, 19201 East R.D. Mize Road, Independence, Missouri. And this will be on the 60th anniversary of the 1953 CIA coup in Iran. Before we close, I bring you a public service announcement from the NSA. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us. Comments or questions, send an email to mail@tellsomebody.us. You can also follow me on Twitter @TellSomebodyNow. The Tell Somebody podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcast of Tell Somebody heard on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City, streaming around the world at www.kkfi.org. I'll be on 90.1 FM KKFI every Thursday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now! If you haven't heard Tell Somebody before, I hope you'll listen again. Check out the podcast and the broadcast. Click on a tile at www.tellsomebody.us for a link to a past show. If you enjoyed the show and appreciated the information you got from it, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth or Facebook or Twitter or email list or any other way you can think of. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next Thursday at 9 a.m. on Tell Somebody or anytime you like at www.tellsomebody.us.